words of King Lemuel. And here the Rosh says, as Rashi says as well, Lemuel is a name for Shlomo HaMelech. And Lemuel basically means to God, meaning to say that although Shlomo HaMelech in his lifetime had difficult misyanis, certain things like Ravirus, marrying Masparo and the like, but Rosh Yomar, he was Makabel at Taikacha and he became a Tzaddik. And this is the Musar, this is the Taikacha that he was given by his mother. I'm not going to go over the Taikacha again. You'll remember that essentially he was telling him to beware of two things: keep away from alcohol and keep away from fooling around too much with women. Both of them can take you away from your goal in life. Now, starting from Pasuk Yud, he then moves into really the most famous part of the book of Mishlei, and that is Eishes Chayil, the woman of valor, the woman of courage, the woman of heroism. The old minhag of Klal Yisrael is to say it every Friday night. According to the Midrash, this was said as an expression of gratitude to his mother. This was not said about his wife, any of his wives. He said about his mother that his mother represented a true Eishes Chayil. Now, Eishes Chayil, of course, is written as an alphabetical acrostic, right? As you know, every verse begins with a letter of the alphabet. Has many, many different layers of meaning. Again, especially for people who are, well, I guess everybody's either married or going to be married, so I should say that one should never forget that all the esoteric interpretations of Eishes Chayil do not negate the literal interpretation of Eishes Chayil. It is indeed praise for one's wife. It's indeed important to be modern type, right? You don't simply think about all the higher meanings without understanding the basic meaning. But besides the basic praise of what a wife can do to a family, as a mother, as a wife, as a person who enables the husband to learn and grow in his ruchnius, the Ezer Kenegdai, there are many, many meanings of Eishes Chayil that go even beyond that level. And in particular, the Mahalach of the Vilna Gaon here is to say that the Eishes Chayil is a remez to the Torah. But I did indicate last week, there's a little bit of an ambiguity. In other words, he basically says the following. He has a very fascinating gematria. Chayil, which means valor or strength, Chayil is 48. Right? Ches Yudlam, 48. Pirkei Avos says there are 48 ways that you acquire the Torah. Right? 48 different ways, different midos that you have to cultivate to acquire the Torah. So Eishes Chayil is a reference to the Torah that is acquired with 48 ways. But it's a little ambiguous because this almost seems to switch from pasuk to pasuk. Is Eishes Chayil the, in other words, who is the husband and who is the wife? Meaning, is Eishes Chayil a description of the Torah? And the husband is the Talmud Chacham who is wedded to the Torah? Or is Eishes Chayil the Talmud Chacham and the husband is HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Meaning to say, is an Eishes Chayil the Torah that is acquired in 48 ways? Or is it the Talmud Chacham who has acquired Torah in the 48 ways? Now you'll see it goes back and forth. Certain sukkim, the Gra talks about the husband as the Talmud Chacham, whose wife, the Torah, protects him. So the image there would be the Talmud Chacham is married to the Torah as his wife. However, in other places, the Gra learns that the Talmud Chacham is the Eishes Chayil who has absorbed the Torah, and he's thereby married to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it goes a little back and forth. It's not entirely clear. But at least initially, the Vilna Gaon seems to say that the Eishes Chayil is the Torah itself. In other words, it's the woman that is acquired in 48 ways. And the Baal that is benefiting from the woman is the Talmud Chacham. So the Hemshech of Eishes Chayil on this secondary meaning, or this is a deeper meaning, is all of the blessings that the connection to the Torah brings to the person who learns Torah. Okay, that's the idea of the Eishes Chayil. So we start off with the idea of Eishes Chayil Niyimtza, Who can find anything as precious as the Eish HaChayil, when the Eish HaChayil is the Torah? Now, the Gemara says another nice little thing. The Pashtus, you know, obviously in Tanakh we don't have the same punctuation as English, but the way we translate Eish HaChayil Miyimsa, we put a question mark after it. Who can find such a precious, wonderful wife as the Torah is? But the Gemara suggests an interesting drush, that instead of learning it as a question, we're learning it as an actual statement. The person who is who, meaning I have no sense of my gaiva, no sense of myself. Eish HaChayil, me yimsa, the person who is a me, not quite the opposite of the English, me, meaning if you're like a nobody, yimsa, you will find the title. Right, so instead of a question mark, and in fact he has a few other pesukim like that. For example, he brings the pasuk, Amok, Amok, the Torah is so deep, Mi Yimsa Enu, who can find it? But the same interpretation. Who will find it? Me, the person who is like a nomad, will find it. Right, so this is a very important reference to the idea that Anava is necessary for Torah. And it's not so obvious, you know, why that has to be so. After all, you know, you have brilliant, brilliant people in many, many fields. Occasionally they're modest, but quite often they're not. And, you know, you can have the world's greatest whatever, and the person might be very, very conceited. And yet, what this pasuk is teaching us, and many other pasukim as well, it's not only here, is that the ability to become great in Torah, truly great in Torah, requires a level of humility. Now, there are different ways of understanding it. One way of understanding it, which might be the simplest way, well, listen, if we're only talking about knowing things, all right, whether you're a Balgaiva or not, you can know things. But Torah is more than just information that you know. Torah refers to your connection to Hashem, it refers to the purity of your neshama, that the Torah is the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that comes into a person and can transform a person. Well, you can know a whole bunch of things in your head, but without Anava, HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot connect to you. The Gemara says in Maseches Sota that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates the Baal Gaiva so much that Hashem says there's no room for me and him to live in the same world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the Baal Gaiva is Deiched Ragli HaShina. He pushes away the legs of the Shekhinah. So one way of understanding it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates the Baal Gaiva. There's no way that with Gaiva my Torah can bring me close to Hashem. Which means it's not making the point about the cognition. It's not making the point that you may not know Shas. You know, you may memorize Shas or whatever it is, but it's not going to transform you in any way. But in another way, I think it's equally true that because the Torah is divine wisdom, and it's true, even its understanding cannot come to a human being unless he's double of Hashem. And that's why you have 48 ways, but we don't have 48 ways that you need to understand mathematics, right? The whole idea of manifest Jerachim, as it were. And also, even a simpler explanation, that is, since Chazal say that a Zeyu Chacham, a wise person, is a person who learns from everybody, without Anava, you're not going to be willing to learn from anybody, because you think you have it already. Number one, a person is a Baal Gaiva. When he doesn't understand something, he's not going to ask anybody, because he doesn't want anyone to think he doesn't understand. And number two, he's not willing to reconsider his position if someone has a contrary svara. So Mimela, even on the cognitive level, even on the intellectual level, his conclusions are very likely to be not correct, simply because he's not open to hearing what other people have to say, and he's not willing to ask questions that would admit his ignorance. They're common mitzvah about the even the Dalei Hador, they hear a bar mitzvah speech or something. And they'll ask the kid, can you explain that again? Maybe they're just doing it to make the kids feel good, I don't know, but there's like a desire to know, to understand like every little thing. That was a picture of Rebbe Yashar, it's a good advertisement, that he was looking at a Hebrew art scroll. The chat is in the Hebrew art scroll. What is he looking? Again, it's like the Gemara says. The Gemara says, why are totally surrounded by water. And yet, when it starts raining, and there are little raindrops, the fish come up to get a little bit more water. Talmud Chacham can be totally surrounded with Torah. So Rabbi Gashir, who lived in a new commentary cooler, but if maybe some kind of guy, you know, who was working on the sugya, you know, more extensively now than Rabbi Gashir was hoping it, if that would be shy, maybe he has some Torah, right? So he's looking around to see if there's another thing, you know, he could get. It's like the drop of water coming down to the fish. But that's genuine anava. Genuine honesty means, you know, I can learn from anybody. Anybody can teach me something. And I want to learn from everybody. Right? So that's the grass. So the grass is a nice connection. Eishes Chayil, you want to find the Eishes Chayil, me, Yitzhak. You have to be a me. Who am I? Meaning you don't have a sense of your ego and your gaiva. Then it goes further. It says, Rachaik Mipninim Michra. Michra means her value is Rachaik, much, much far far. Now, Pninim Pninim actually has two translations in English. Pninim is sometimes translated as ruby. In fact, you'll see it in the Arts World or other translations. Is it rubies or is it pearls? Some say Pnina, not a Hebrew, but Pnina is a pearl. So the chokas, it was a pearl or a ruby, but either way, it's a precious stone. And what it's saying is, the Eishes Chayil is far greater than Pnina. Now here, by the way, the Gemara itself has an interesting drasha. That Pnina is a play on words. It can also mean the inner of inners, which is the Kodesh Kedusha. And this is the source of the famous Maamar Chazal, that a Mamzer, even a Mamzer, as a Talmud Chacham, is greater than a Kohen Gadol, who's an Am Haaretz. Now, actually, it doesn't quote this pasuk. It's the same. It's in, there's another pasuk, Yikarehi Mipninim. The Torah is more precious than rubies or pearls. So the drasha is, the Talmud Chacham is more precious than the Kohen Gadol, Shenichnas Lifnai Lifnim, who goes into the Kodesh Abdashi. So by extension, the identical interpretation would apply here, that the Torah is greater than the level of the Kohen Gadol. And that's an important idea, because as the Rambam says, there are three crowns that the Jewish people were given. The crown of Kahuna, the crown of Malchus, and the crown of Torah. But the crown of Kahuna, you have to be a Kohen. The crown of Malchus, you have to be descended from David and Malchus based David. No matter what I can do, and I can't make myself a Kohen, I can't make myself a Melech. But the Rambam says the godless of Kesher Torah is Kesher Torah is the ultimate democracy. Kesher Torah is something that every single person is able, every single Jew is able to, Jewish man, you know, I mean, whoever has a religion, woman is not conservative on the Torah, but she becomes the queen of Torah by the help that she gives to it. So the king of Torah also has the Kesher of Torah, just like a king and a queen have a crown. But the Rambam says that the greatness of Kesher Torah is an access to the distinction and Korba Lashem that every single person is able to achieve. And that makes it even greater than Pninim, greater than the Kohen Gadol, that is Nichras Lifnai Lifnim. But another interpretation of the idea of saying the Torah is greater than Pninim, see again, notice, it doesn't say greater, it says distant, literally, rachak. So we translate greater. But rachak can be very following. The Torah is very far away from those who are overly invested in Gashmis. So instead of saying it's more precious than rubies, it's saying the Torah is far away from the people who are involved in ruby hunting, so to speak. And here the lesson is, once again, Pirkei Avos says, what is the derech of Torah? Pas b'melech teicham. Now that's the kasha. Rabbi Shapiro, you know, most of these sheaves in Europe, lots of the famous sheaves, they didn't have dormitories and they didn't have dining rooms. This is known. What happened was they would put people in private homes. And listen, you know, sometimes you'd live in a dormitory and think, yeah, I'd love to be in a private home, but you know, the people were very poor, and they had a responsibility to feed you. What did they have? They were dirt poor, you know, so you were lucky if you got great, these upcoming Kadol Yehuda, but even as a young man, he started Tapiomi. He wanted to start a yeshiva in Poland. This is not a literacy yeshiva, but a Polish yeshiva. Rav Bushner, I think, Bnei Brak is like the last Talmud that still results from the Yehuda yeshiva. And there were a lot of tikkunim there. First of all, to get into the Lubavitch yeshiva, you had to know 200 Bible or more by heart to get into the yeshiva. It was a yeshiva for Mitzuyanim, and they had a fancy dormitory and a dining room and a little whatever. I love food meant in Poland, I'm not sure, there wasn't a lot there, but it was a very, very fancy place. Yeah, the building is still there. It became, it's unfortunately a museum, because there aren't that many Jews in Poland, but it is a Jewish museum, in the basement of which is a gym, for some crazy reason, I actually still have. But the last time you only see him, they actually did have an event in the Lubavitch Yeshiva, near Shabbat Yeshiva. So people asked him, what are you doing? You're making a fancy dormitory, you're making good food. And Pirkei Avos says, yeah.
So the rabbis approved, they probably insisted to have a gym for the offering.
No. The gym was not from his time. The gym was much later. It was
okay.
Because, this time I don't think they had it. But they did have a model. One thing they did have a scale model of the Beis Hamikdash, so people would see what it was like they have here in the old city. So they asked Rav Meir Shapiro, he says, what are you doing? He said, Pirkei Avos says, Bnei Torah is supposed to live on bread and sleep on the floor. Why are you giving them luxury? Why are you giving them all this kashrus? So his argument was that Pirkei Avos is b'dieved, not b'chatkin. In other words, Pirkei Avos means that even if you have to live a life of tzar, it's worth it to be meiser nefesh. But that's not saying l'chatkhila you should seek it out. L'chatkhila you try to make things comfortable. That's what he said. But I'll leave it to Yemes, at least in the Pirush and Grand Michelin, you see many, many times. But Dr. that wasn't the case. That a person needs on some level, you have to be careful not to be excessive because we're a weaker generation in the old person. So for me to tell anybody, you should only live on bread and water and sleep on the floor wouldn't be correct because it's likely that our health would suffer and we wouldn't be able to learn that well. But it is true we have a certain amount of distancing from the physical pleasures of the world. If one is too involved in the Olam HaGashmi, then the Olam HaTorah is not going to appeal to you that much, like anything else. Even in Gashmius is that way. If you're into junk food, you're not going to spend the hours and hours to make a fancy French meal, right? That's the same thing. So Ruchnius is not an instant gratification. It's not like, sooner than I open up in the morning, I'm changed, I'm fixed. It's a long, difficult process. You make progress every day. Then it goes work and gives you Leora. But it takes a long time. Physical things are shortcuts. They give you like an immediate rush. And when you become addicted to the physicality of immediate gratification, it's much more difficult to be machabin yourself to the laborious processes of Lima Tayra. So, Rachay Mipnine Mishra means that if you want to acquire the Torah, you have to distance yourself from the jewels and the glamour and everything else. Right? So that's another interpretation, that a person has to be marked and protected. Even a Yushami, the Tosis of Ksuba Springs, it's a strict Yushami, I'm afraid to say it because I don't want to make anybody feel bad. Including myself, the Yushami says, before a person prays that Torah should enter his mouth, he should pray that madanim, fancy food, should not enter his mouth. That's Yushami, the Tosis says. And be it as it may, as I say, the issue is not, for our Matreya, the issue is not to advocate any type of excessive preaches. One should eat normally, one should sleep normally, one should exercise normally, all of these things that we need, but at the same time, one should not be that the purchase price of Torah requires that you distance yourself from rubies, which might be a sign of Gashmius, and come to the next pasuk, and once again, we don't have this ambiguity. Batach bo lei baila. Her batach, right? Bitachon is trust. And okay, let's talk about this in a more general sense. I mean, normally we talk about bitachon in Hashem. Like we have covered in that. What does it mean to be have bitachon in Hashem? What is the difference between emuna and bitachon? And emuna is faith, and bitachon is trust. So the Rambam writes, very much it, because tradition and the portraits on emuna will be tachon. So emuna is academic, and bitachon is practical. Emuna means I intellectually believe that Hashem is the borei olam, and that everything that happens in the world is a reflection of the will of Hashem. That's emuna. Very important. Emuna is the yisod of everything. But a person can believe all sorts of things. But when they're actually confronted with crises in their lives, sometimes we can't help it. We panic. We get afraid. We get anxious. But where's your emuna? Well, the answer is, well, I have the emuna, but it didn't really affect me in a practical, lemaisa, bigger way. So bitachon is, as the expression goes, where the rubber hits the road. Bitachon is the actual application of emuna into the life crises that you find yourself. So the Baal Bitachon lives in a certain serenity. Now, the Chazanish writes that Bitachon does not mean everything will turn out the way you want it to turn out. Meaning of this, that he was actually, this was a criticism against the Nevada Kishita of Moser. That was censored, from the Emuna of Bitachon. They took it out. But the author of Navarra did have what you might call a very extreme shita in Bitachon, in which he says, if you truly believe that Hashem will take care of you, you'll get anything you want. In other words, kind of the idea of the car. If I really believe Hashem can give me a Cadillac, then I will get a Cadillac. Maybe it's a caricature, but that's in somewhat of the author of Navarra account. And the Chazon Ish wrote the Emunah Bitachon to negate that idea. And he said, bitachon does not mean people won't die. Bitachon doesn't mean you'll get a job. Bitachon doesn't mean life will be easy. It does mean that whatever happens was the will of Hashem. It was not random. It was not meaningless. And therefore, knowing that Hashem loves us, there is something positive that we can get. Okay? That's kind of a realistic idea of bitachon. Because according to the author of the Marduk, if something bad happened to you, the only answer is you didn't have enough bitachon. Now, that's not always going to work, because there are people who have, you know, I mean, there was a Holocaust in which there were people who certainly, b'chayra, reached the highest level of bitachon, b'gidolim, b'chayim, and b'chayim, and the like. The Chazon Ish says, the serenity of bitachon does not come from the belief that everything will have a happy ending in the sense of what I want. But bitachon just means the world is not after. Everything has a purpose. Everything is for the good. God did what's over. So that is what bitachon is. And the chayv is all about it. So the classic sefer, or the classic chayvot of the sefer to learn about this, is the shara bitachon of the chayv is all about it. The great, great Moshe Svar, much earlier, so chayv is all about it. Goes back before the Rambam. It's a very, very early sefer. But Chazal Rambam is a classic on many, many levels. It was written in Arabic, translated into Hebrew, very hard Hebrew, and then there are recent modern Hebrew translations which are much easier to look at. And his chapters are called Sha'arim. And the Shara Bitachon is the classic study of Bitachon. And he talks about all these different questions. How do you balance hishtalus and bitachon? If I believe I can't do it, why do I have to work? All of those discussions are there. So they tell the story that the Brisker Rav got married. So he married into a wealthy family. And as part of his nidunya, as part of his dowry, he was given a whole block of big apartment buildings in Warsaw, in which he would live off the rent. There was a manager, he lived off the rent, and the arrangement was that he would wear his helmet, basically. He would wear his helmet. That would be it. What happened was, it's still not clear what the nice was, basically the property manager was supposed to register the land title to Brisker Road, just registered in his own name. And then the thing called got bankrupt, or whatever it was, and the Brisker Road, only way of possibly getting some money back would be to report this guy to the secular. See what chutzpah is. The person went over the Brisker Road eventually, and he was mighty when he did. He said to them, what are you going to do? Call the police on me? And the Brisker Road held. Again, this is the thing we sure is in, that because there's a general history between Meister and Jew to be guided, the Brisker Road held and he wasn't going to do it. So some guy like said, be honest, responded. He said, okay, I took your property, but you know, what can I do? I spent it all. Let's just, I spent all the money. I had no money. I just used it up, and you know, I know you're not going to report it to the police, and he didn't. So the Brisker Road was immediately, you know, put into poverty. It was very surprising, not because he cared about money, but because he thought he would be able to learn. So it says he locked himself up in a room for 2 weeks, and if he went out there, and he learned Shari B'Tacha like 100 times. Shari B'Tacha. And he says, when he came out, he says, I have a treasure that's much, much more valuable than in the dunya I was. He says, people think, you know, when you have like 100,000 ruble or whatever the amount was in the bank, you know, you can have bitachon. He says, no, he says, anybody can have bitachon. If I have $1 million in the bank, yeah, sure, that's easy for me to be Motaya Hashem. Motaya Hashem is what you don't have. And he said that was a great gift to the Yerushalayim gave him, the gift of finding bitachon.
So emunah is much easier than
bitachon.
I mean,
emunah is the foundation of bitachon, but bitachon is when you bring it into your actual life.
But to accomplish emunah, it takes very little effort.
I'm not going to say that either. Rav Chanan says, according to the Rambam, the first of the Aseret Dibros, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, is actually a mitzvah. It's a commandment. What's it a commandment? It seems to be a statement. The Rambam says it's a commandment to have emunah that there is Hashem. A mitzvah called emunah Hashem. Now the Ramban argues with that. The Ramban says, how is it shayach to tell a person, believe in God? How could that be a mitzvah? I mean, mimad shayach, if I believe in that God gave me the mitzvah, I already believe in God. I don't need a mitzvah. Elamai, you're telling a non-believer, you are commanded to believe in God? Well, the non-believer's response might be, who says? What am I supposed to say? God says? I don't believe in God. The Ramban says, it's not shayach for emunah to be a mitzvah per se, rather emunah is the yisod, the foundation for why you have to keep all other mitzvahs. Nevertheless, in spite of that, the Rambam has a very clear writing from Marin Makas that Anoshi is in the Sukkot, as Gemara says. There are 613 mitzvahs, and we know that from Torah, Sibolon, and Moshe. Moshe gave us Torah, the Gemara asked the Kacha. Torah is the Gematria 611. So what's the Gemara's answer? Yeah, 611 we heard from Moshe. But Anochi, the first two commandments we heard from Hashem, and then we were scared. Anochi, and Lo Yelacham, you should have any other gods, we heard from Hashem. That's the Gemara not. So what does the Gemara say? The Gemara is saying the favorite. Anochi Hashem Elokecha is a mitzvah. That's what the Gemara says. Anochi is a mitzvah. And the Rambam says it's called the mitzvah of Emunah. What do you do with the Ramban's kasha? Who are you commanding to be a maimon? A maimon? He doesn't need a mitzvah. So the answer is, the way we're learning the Rambam, this was a big favor of Noah Weinberg, that we're talking to a person who is minded because he has a messiah from his parents, and we're telling him, convert the emunah that you have as a matter of messiah into a rational belief. This is the finish of the Rambam, that a person is actually obligated to intellectually convince himself of the existence of God, to examine the proofs, and etc. Now, you know, many Gedolim not only disagreed with this, but they thought it was dangerous. once you open yourself up to trying to prove it, what if you don't follow the proofs, etc. So this is a machlokes that's still to this very day. This is why, you know, go down to the Beis Medrash, and we have all of the Rambam Svarim on the shelves, except for the Maror Buchim. Where's the guy to the complex? I want the Maror Buchim. It's not in the Beis Medrash. Maror Buchim is a philosophical treatise devoted in large part to proving the existence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. We don't necessarily go there. Even the Chayos HaLevavos. The first shahr of the Chayos HaLevavos is called Shahr HaYichud, which is the arguments for the unity of Hashem. In this modern Hebrew translation I mentioned, which is called Leif Tov, they don't translate Shahr HaYichud. They reproduce it, they don't translate it. But they preface Shahr HaYichud with a 50-page anthology of different Gedolim, including the Gra, that say, don't learn this though. A common phrase is, Chayos HaLevavos is wonderful, wonderful Sefer, start from the second shahr. This is what they always say. Don't do the bird. No. So, this is an old machlokes. I'm not here to be machria.
Is that a machlokes between Isha Torah and Ur-Sameach?
I wouldn't want to put it... I can't even take that through, because when I got the Intel from the same issues. If there's a machlokas, it may be a machlokas in comparative emphasis, but I can't say any more that there's a machlokas that Arsmer doesn't teach the philosophical foundations of Judaism, because they certainly do. We do discuss women in Hashem, groups for God, etc. But maybe at one point, perhaps, there was a sharper division. But now I would just say it's not for me to have it's not so much enough. No, because the emphasis is several questions as well. Because the machlekes rishonim, whether you should get into a philosophical proofs of God, is referring to people who were brought up religious. They were brought up religious. They absorbed this as the Mesorah of their foremothers. So the Rashba and other rishonim say, why are you opening up a Pandora's box where you don't know what's going to happen? But when you're dealing with Talmidim who have been exposed to all of this happy courses, they already know all of these ideas. Then the Chayyim said, double punch it, all the Rishonim would be masking that you need to philosophically address ideas because they've been exposed to those philosophical ideas. And so the Machlekes is that it's really not so, it's not so nogei a Chayyim to be true about that much.
What is it still it means that they go in, and it's not that they go in, it says, don't know Chayyim, but Kuzri is. So what's the... And Kuzri, it's also a book that... I mean, that's the statement they're going to say that... Not Chayehu, but it says Kuzri...
I don't remember that much, but the Kuzri is still a different thing. The Kuzri...
And Kuzri also tries to...
Kuzri does not talk about proof of the Kodesh Baruch. The Kuzri tries to prove Matan Torah, those are historical events. But he does not... see, again, the problem is the Kuzri... Remember the mice here. The Maisa of the Kuzri was that the king calls people of different religions. Everybody believes in God there. So the issue of Emunah Bashem, there was no atheist in the group. So there, everybody was Maminim. It was just a question of whether Judaism is the right religion or Christianity or Islam, whatever it is. It's a different Nikuda. It's Madaki and the Rambam, as the Rambam goes through the different proofs. Because the Rambam, remember, the problem the Rambam had was that the Rambam had many Jews who were very kosher to Aristotle. Aristotle denied the existence of a supreme God. The Rambam wanted to work within Aristotelian philosophy to show that even within those premises, there is a Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Rambam had to get into all of that. Okay. Now this was a total digression because the emphasis is, the only reason I brought it up is because of the word of Bata. Bata Chilas, which is not referring to the Tachan in Hashem. The reason why what I said is has some relevance is that Bitachan is not an intellectual understanding. Bitachan is the emotional sense of being safe, of being secure, of being protected. Okay? So, Batach Bo'alala, her husband has a sense of serenity and protection. Now again, here, the way the Gemara seems to be interpreting it is, the Torah is the wife, and the Baal of the Torah is the Talmud Chacham, the one who learns Torah, the one who tries to connect, right? So what does a person's connection to Torah give him? It gives him a sense of, and we'll start with this, it gives him a sense of bitachon, security, serenity. Now, what level is true, you know? What's your friend, this is Captain Amir, he's talking about his father, Rebbe Tel, who was a Rebbe of mine many, many, many years ago, before he even came to Eretz Yisrael, and then there he started, you know. So he said that some people, when they learn, you know, they get nervous, maybe most of us, they get nervous, they get tense. He says, and you can't resist, when his father learns, he says, it's like such a relaxation, it's like all of the tension goes away. That's the idea of bitachon, the sense of feeling, a sense of that's another great idea. It, you know, it's not something that comes to us automatically. And part of the agape vatsasim, we sometimes learn, even though it's hard. But ultimately, now, this is what Rabbi Sri used to say, the chazavish. This comes only if you learn a very long time, meaning to say, like they say, it's like a marathon, you know. If you run 20 miles, so like once you hit the 20-mile peak, you somehow get a whole reserve of kaichas. You know, very far from knowing what that's like. But then, so he says, in learning, it's the same idea. He says, if you learn 10 hours straight, 10 hours straight, he says, something happens to you. It's a different thing. And at that point, it's like, it becomes almost an effortless. Hashem's kind of carrying you. But it takes a lot of commitment till you reach that particular point. It actually does happen. So on the simplest level, Torah gives a person a serenity, a security. But the Gra brings a different thing. The Gra brings a very interesting Gemara in Saita. Gemara in Saita says like this. Gemara in Saita says that Liman HaTorah gives a person two benefits. Nigni is mugging. It protects a person from Yisurin. Yisurin is suffering, whether it's sickness or calamity. It says, when a person is learning Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will protect him from Yisurah. Now again, this is always going to be a country because this and that happens. But because you have to understand, in the spiritual world of Duchness, you never have single causes. I mean, there's always an interplay of many, many factors. So even if learning Torah should give a person certain chutz, there might be something else that takes it away. But in the abstract, Torah alone, as an isolated variable, Torah is megin b'nei yisurin. Megin protects a person from yisurin. And number two, it's matzil a person from chet. That while I'm learning, I'm giving a segula that I will not be nishol b'chet. Now the Gemara then asks the Kasha, this is the Gemara in Saita. It stumbled from committing a sin. So the Gemara in Saita asks the Kasha about Dayeg and Achisayba. Dayeg HaAdami, you remember, was one of Dagan HaMelech's advisors. And Dayeg was a great, great Talmud Chacham. Sometimes Dayeg was one of Shaul HaMelech's advisors. And Dayeg was the one who informed Shaul that where David was hiding, that David got hospitality rather from Nov, the city of Kohanim, and as a result of Dayeg HaAdami's Lashon Hara, Shaul HaMelech wiped out the whole city of Nov Ir HaKohanim, and because of this, Dayeg does not have a share in Olam Haba. That's Dayeg. Achisayko is one of David HaMelech. But Achisaipel sided with Avshalom, and Avshalom, David's son, rebelled against his father. And if you remember, after Avshalom was killed, Achisaipel committed suicide. Achisaipel killed himself. He also does not have a share in the Olam Haba. Now the Gemara says, yes, Akasha, if you're telling me that the Liman HaTorah protects a person from chet, how is it Shayach that Doeg and Achisaybel became Rishayach? How did they go out with Tarbas Ra? So the Gemara's answer is, when does Torah protect you from a chet? That's only while you're learning it. As soon as you stop learning it, the Yetzer Hara comes back and it can two protections that Torah gives you. Torah protects you from suffering, and Torah protects you from sinning. But the protection from sinning is only while you're Isaac in Torah. The protection of suffering will be mapshed again, or will continue even when you're not learning Torah. So the Gemara says, that's merumas in this pasuk. That's really gimel, and that's really why it's because it's gamalasu tayi b'mayra kol yimechaya. In other words, yes, let's connect the pasuk, the base pasuk of the gimel pasuk. The Baal of Tayra, the Talmud Chacham that learns, will have a sense of serenity and safety in the world. Sholo lo yechsar, he will not lose any of his wealth. Here the Rav brings down Gemara Saita that says that Averos don't take away your Torah, meaning like this. If I do a mitzvah and I do an Avera, so an Avera may cancel the mitzvah, now I'm down to zero. But if I learn Torah and I do Averos, they are kept as separate calculations, meaning to say, you'll get punished for the Avera, sure. But the Avera does not take away the Torah. Right? So that's Sholo Lo Yechzor, the wealth that you've accumulated in Torah will not be taken away or diminished by Averos. Now the next verse, she, gomalasu tayv, she does good for you and not bad. It doesn't say, right? Kol yimei chayeha, all the days of her life. So here's what the Gra says. The Gra says, tayv is protection from sin. What is the good the Torah does for you? The Torah is matzel you from chet. But since the Torah is matzel you from chet only while you're learning, the phrase kol yimei, in other words, the Gemara is learning like this. Tayv is matzel you min chet, v'lo ra, and she won't let bad things happen to you, refers to it'll protect you from your servant. But kol yimei chaya is only going on the low rung. In other words, because masu yimei chayit is only while you're learning. But to be masu you from the yeshurin, the low rung, that is even going to be kol yimei chaya all the days, even when you're not learning. So the Gemara says that the Gemara in Saita is merumas in the structure of this pasuk.
You said that Averus, they cancel out the mitzvahs.
This is actually Al-Akasha. I mean, there's a Gemara in Saita seems to say that Averos cancel out the mitzvahs, but Averos do not cancel out Torah. And that would seem to indicate, although everything has to be weighted, that if I have 50 mitzvahs, 50 Averos, I don't get rewarded for the 50 and punished for the other 50, but rather they simply cancel each other out. So I have a zero count. That's as opposed to Torah, where the account of Torah is never diminished by your Averus. Now the emphasis that there are many recovers that say exactly the opposite. They say exactly the opposite. They say that for every single Maisa Tov, a person is going to get rewarded. And for every single Maisa Ra, a person is going to be a Nenash, either El Mazar or Baba. And we never say that a mitzvah takes away the punishment of an aver, or an aver takes away the punishment of a mitzvah. If you do true with it, again, there might be ways of mitigating. So it's difficult. I mean, there seems to be a machlokes in Chazal whether a Kodesh Baruch Hu works by cancellation or he keeps separate accounts. But the one thing that is clear is that even if we say a Kodesh Baruch Hu works by cancellation, that is not true for the reward of Torah learning. The reward of Torah learning is not affected by the averus that you do. Rather, that is going to be your reward, and there'll be a chesh for the brother of averus.
I think in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim that if a person, let's say, sins or says lashon hara, then his words of Torah don't have a good effect.
Well, again, like everything else, the quality though an Aveira will not cause you to forfeit your Torah, but it may redefine the quality of the Torah learning is. So it could certainly have a very, very strong effect. But it also, keep in mind, there's a difference between past and future. Meaning to say, my existing Aveiros may prevent my Torah from being much better. But let's say I learned Torah at a high level. Okay? I'm not going to lose that based on what I do later. So it's really not a theory. It's time to talk about the pre-existing chesronos, meaning your Torah is not going to be so high quality. What the Vilna Gaon is talking about is that the holiness you did achieve by your Torah learning is not going to be taken away or weakened by what you do later.
I heard that when a person says Lashon Hara, he gives away his Averis and he thinks he gives away his mitzvahs and he thinks the other guy's Averis.
That's interesting. You know, that's there is such a teaching. There's no chazal, I believe there. I don't want to say for sure, but I believe there's no chazal that says that. That is from the Chavos HaLubavos. It's fascinating. And I'm portion one here. Where did the Chavos HaLubavos come from? But it is a teaching of the Chavos HaLubavos that when you speak Lashon Hara, somebody, you get his Averis and they get your answers.
Is it possible that he got it from a swarm that sort of never made it into our modern times? Is it possible that?
Chavos HaLubavos can't just make something up like that. Generally speaking, Chavos HaLubavos says many things that are not in Chazal. They need to hear swarms. That's a great Rishon. He's able to say different ideas, but something like this is you need some source. You couldn't just say it's going to be a switch. I mean, normally there wouldn't be a switch in that way. I don't know. I'll have to go back and check it. So, okay, I found this badge because I was looking for a long time ago. I was looking for the makor of that well-known idea, and I was sure it must be the mark. It must be an address or something. Again, continuing about the woman of valor, we have the Pasuk Dalet, and that is Dorsha Semer Pishkin, which is interesting. Now here it says she seeks out wool and linen, and they were together, meaning the appropriate garments for her family. And your hands produce b'chepetz. B'chepetz means with enthusiasm and desire. Meaning to provide for her family is something that's very appropriate. Now, here, the Gemara has a Kabbalistic comment. I don't fully understand. He connects wool to negative commandments. I'm sorry, wool to Mrs. Asay, positive commandments, and linen to negative commandments. But I'll tell you what the Marsha says. There is a comment of the Marsha on this that's very, very interesting. You know, the Gemara says in Urban that there was a long-standing machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Is it better for man to be created or not created? One opinion said, no, Achdi Azam Shalom Nibra. Would it be better not to be created at all? And the other says, no, it's better to be created. And this was kind of an unresolved machlokas. At the end of the 13 years of machlokas, they kind of came to a compromise. Well, it would have been better not to be created, but once you're here, you should make the best of it. So the Marsha says like this. The Marsha says a fascinating idea.
What's the point of machlokas like this?
So the Marsha says, the machlokas is like this. The machlokas is like this. We have a Taryag mitzvahs. 248 and mitzvahs to say. 365 are mitzvahs leisas. Now, if I was never born, then, Baruch Hashem, there's no way I'm going to be able to analyze us. So the 365 have not been transgressed for sure. On the other hand, I don't have the ability to do the 248. So as a betting person, is it better to put me into a world where I have the possibility of doing the 248, even though I have the risk of violating the 365? Or do we say, in such a situation, that it is better to not run the risk of transgressing 365, even if it means you don't have the possibility of doing the 248. This was a machlokes. So, the Gemara says the following. same root pishka. Now listen, the Rebbe says here, the Gemara says itself, says elsewhere. The Mashal is the one that gives you the numerical calculation, okay? The Gra follows that Mahalach, who has both the Mashal, and the Gra says the following approach. You know, we have a din, right, in Parshas Kisaitse, the Torah says, Dilam Tasalach, you should have a tzitzis. And then it says, Leisilba Shatnas, do not wear Shatnas. So what is the Gemara saying to us? Why is Shatnas adjacent to tzitzis? To teach me that even though you're not allowed to wear Shatnas, but what do we say? If I need to have Shatnas in my tzitzis, I'll give you the case in a moment, the mitzvah sasei of tzitzis, right, the positive commandment of tzitzis, overrides the negative commandment of Shabbos. Right? This is a famous principle called Essay Doche Losas. You know, the positive. Now, let me just back up a little bit. Obviously, we're never going to say transgress a negative to do a positive if I could have done the positive without transgressing the negative. So most of the time, let's say today, there is no justification on a woolen garment to put linen scissors. Why should I put linen scissors on it? I can do wool on wool, right? But in the time of Chazal, when they had chelas, again, I'll discuss today what that would mean, halachas, chelas has to be wool. Chelas has to be wool. Right? So in the Mela, if I'm wearing a linen garment, the only way I could fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis on a linen garment is by wearing tzitzis. Now, Tzitzis has to catch you, well, but who says you have to wear a linen garment to wear a woolen garment? The answer is each beggar has its own mitzvah. So you have to look at how could I do the mitzvah on this garment? And if there's no way I could do the mitzvah of this garment except with woolen tzitzis, the Torah actually says the positive commandment overrides the negative. Now, today, at least if you hold, you don't have techeilas. So once again, if I have a linen garment, theoretically I can have linen tzitzis, right? And even those people that say they have techeilas, but you know, at most they say, you know, it's either a suffek or it's more likely. But since it's not a certainty, it's a third project, they would not allow essay docha losas. Now, what is the svara? Why should a positive commandment be more important than a negative? Have another example of asking you to do a brit on Shabbos. That's the eighth day. That actually is an example of essay dochalos. Why should an essay be dochalos? If anything, I should say a negative commandment is more chamar. And if a positive is in conflict with a negative, I shouldn't do anything. So the Ramban says, in this week's party, the Ramban says, beautiful thing, the Ramban says, mitzvos asay are ways you express avas Hashem. Like when I love somebody, I do something for them. A lo saser is when you're afraid, yiras Hashem. Right? I don't dare touch them, I'm not supposed to touch. Since avas Hashem is a greater matreda than yiras Hashem, so the positive overrides the negative. A brisak to draw like this, if that's so, if indeed doing positive commandments are a greater spiritually higher level than refraining from the negative, then my life is worthwhile. It is worthwhile to come into the world, to have the possibility of doing the 248, even if that also creates the possibility of transgressing the 367. See, again, if I would never be created, the 365 would be safe, but the 248 wouldn't get done. When I'm created, you now have the 248. But I'm opening myself up to violating the 365. But if the assay is greater than the success. So the Quran says like this. It's all a beautiful empty. Although it's practically, he doesn't say it here. It's in other places, he says. He says over here like this. He says, the one who learns Torah has serenity. He sees the value of his life. Because he looks at the drasha of woman and linen. And he sees, Ruch Hashem, my chance to do the 248s. That's how it looks. So that's the crush of Joshi and Simran. But again, he is surprisingly does not say it in his famous Mishlei, but it's brought in the different form of Nayach Liadab Shimon Nibra and Joshi and Simran.
He doesn't remember that he said Shapo, a broker. In that case, Marina Foshos, he doesn't remember if he said it. Now, the thing is, since it's your bottom, you shouldn't, if it's a suffix, you shouldn't say it.
That's right.
But if you love Hashem and it's on a high level, you know, you should be able to say it.
Well, I understand. On the other hand, it's one thing to say when you for sure have a mitzvah, then you do it even if that will transgress a negative. But here, you might have said it already, right? So your mitzvah itself is a doubtful mitzvah. So you don't want to take Hashem's name in vain. You have to have a U.S. Hashem, not to take Hashem's name in vain. Now, Pasuk Yudal Kesvav, we'll read together. This is the Hey and the Vav. Haisa ki anios socher. Now again, a repeat pshuto. This is the industrious woman who is like a traveling ship. It's described that she goes all over the place to make, by the way, I know some women, they feel, this is back in the United States, I didn't hear it here, they don't like their husbands to sing Eishes Chayil, because it makes them feel too guilty. Because it's like Superwoman, you're just traveling all over the place, you know, she makes a living, professional mother, you know, doing too many plants, sometimes her own vineyards and her own fields. They say they don't want to feel so guilty about all of these standards. So, okay, it's not about you, it's about the Torah. So maybe you care. Maybe that'll make them a little more willing to hear it.
I'm just being in a way, I'm just supposed that it used to be the comment that the woman walks, thought it's
just that's right out of the picture. The peep shooter, this woman is a businesswoman and outside of the home as well, not only in the house. You have a bit of a kasha, because kol kibudim as malach panima. You have a bit of a kasha, but in this kapitel, it describes haisa ki ani ais soicher. She is like a traveling ship. Mi merchak tavi lachma. She brings bread into the home. Mi merchak from a distance. But okay, so with this picture, I have an interesting picture of what the ideal wife did in a home. But again, the Gra is, as I say, interpreting all of these sort of Derech HaTorah. And he says the following. He brings a very interesting idea. He says, there's a Gemara in Erevin that says, La Nivra Laila El Lashinsa. Night was created to sleep. That sounds a little, obviously we have to sleep, but that's all you do at night, so, you know, just sleep. So he brings like this. The Ra says, this refers to the first half of the night, until Chatzais. That's the ideal idea. So in other words, Benjamin Franklin said, go to sleep early, or need a bed early to rise, meaning the idea would be, the first half of the night is the civil for Shina. And the reason is, because the Neshama goes up to Shemayim the first half of the night and it absorbs all sorts of Torah teaching and all sorts of sotos that it then brings back. And then ideally, the Gra says, at midnight, Chatzos, you should wake up. And then you'll be able to learn and incorporate those sotos into your learning as well. So he says, the remnants here is the traveling ship who brings me mercha. Merchak is Shemayim. What do we hear this thing from us? Shemayim. She brings her bread. Bread is Torah. She brings her bread from the furthest distances back to earth. And then she gets up at night. That means the second half of the night. And what can she do? Titei. She gives Torah. She gives sustenance to her bias. I'll explain this term exactly. The chok and an allotment to her narrow self. So the way the Bilgam is describing these two psukim, and I'll show you what each word means right there, is this is describing how the neshama ideally goes up to Shemayim the first half of is actually how the Sefer Chassidus learned this Meiser of Matan Torah, right? We, you know the story, the Makor of our Midan, of why many people stay up the first night of Shavuos. Although Rabbi Yoshua used to boast, says he never stayed up. Rabbi Yoshua, of course, got up every morning at 2 o'clock in the morning. But he used to boast a little bit. He says he never stayed up all night for anything. He never missed a meal. Because he said that people try to stay up here and there and there and there, and they're not their health. And he made a cheshbon. He said to the minute that if he would have stayed up all night, et cetera, the amount of time he would have needed to make up his sleep, he says he would have learned less than if he just kept to his schedule. So he had a sheet of keeping to your schedule without your mother. But the reason why it is a common to stay up all night, the time of the Beis Yosef, is this is a tikkun for Am Yisrael that they slept the night before Matan Torah. They overslept, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to come and wake them up in the morning. So to show that we're eager to be Makabel Torah, we get up first. And then that's the reason that's given. Now the question becomes, it's a Pella. I mean, you're going to get the Torah tomorrow, so they oversleep. I mean, you figure they wouldn't want to sleep at all. How could they sleep? And imagine you had a Matan Torah tomorrow. Big job interview will happen tomorrow. So they actually say that Bakir, this was a sleeping Hashem Shemayim, that they wanted their Neshamas to be masik, to comprehend the deepest secrets of Hashem's Torah. And they know that the Neshama goes up to Shemayim at night, and it gets these great, great secrets. So they literally wanted to escape their bodies to achieve that. So it was a sleep Hashem Shemayim, but the reason why it was wrong was if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give the Torah to angelic disembodied creatures, he would have given it to the Malachim. As indeed the Malachim argued for that. Elamai, Hashem wants us with our physical good to be Makabel Torah, so we should have been up. Right? So the Brat is describing exactly this process. The Neshama is like a boat, like a ship that goes all the far distances to Shemayim to bring that lechem. But it doesn't keep it for herself. She gets up at night, meaning second half of the night. As the Pasuk says, Chatzos Laila, what does David HaMelech say? Chatzos Laila, I get up at midnight. And, there are two phrases. She gives something to her bias and something to her Nairos, her young attendants. So the Vilna Gaon says, Besa refers to the Talmidei Chachamim, meaning to say, the person who acquires this Torah understanding will share that Torah to Talmidei Chachamim. Now the Naros are the younger servants. That refers to Yidden, who are not really capable at this point of understanding Torah, but they keep mitzvahs faithfully. So Terah, what does Terah mean literally? Prey. Prey meaning P-R-E-Y. Prey is what you eat. So the Talmud Chacham devours the Torah. Eats. So it's as if she comes back from Shemayim and then gives you this thing to eat. Chok is like a law, right? So for the people who are not in Torah, they get halachic guidance. They're told what to do, but they don't really internalize it that way. So the bias, the Talmud Chacham, that is the home of the Yeshus gets a terror that they can chew at. And the Naros, who are the servants, the people who keep the mitzvahs, the not Bavli Torah, they get a chok, they get a direction. Which means that's important too, when people have to get a direction. But, I remember when an aspirant from Rabbi Vajra, was such a guy, but he never tired. He really never tired of explaining basic halachas to people, like somebody just said. He knew Rav Adya very well. He said, how many times did Rav Adya tell people how to make tea on Shabbos? He says, he must have done it 10,000 times, but he just loved teaching people the basic halachas of what you do. So that's called a chok. So the Talmud Chacham that is called the home of the Yeshus Chayim, Besa, her home, gets a terev, prey that they can eat, and the certain mitzvah, the Shomrei Mitzvahs get a chok, get a direction. Okay? And that's
okay. So if the woman is the Torah itself, what, how do we explain that? Like, what do you mean she's waking up?
Yeah, that's a good question. As they say, we're switching here. In other words, there is a problem. I don't have a complete answer to this. Meaning, for most of the kapitel, the tirei is the woman. These psukim, it seems to be, you're switching to the neshama. Meaning, the woman who, the mercha tavi lachma, is your neshama, goes up to Shemayim and brings it down. Right? So you're switching from the tirei as the Eish Yisrael to the neshama that's mechubar to the Torah as the Eish Yisrael, right? So it's not clear. In other words, the Quran, again, maybe because this is not his actual language, it's not always clear who is the woman, or what is the woman, and the wife. Now, continuing about a very industrious lady, Zamama Sadeh. Now, Zamama is interesting. This is the word that sometimes is used in a negative way, about Dafka. This is Adam Zomamim. Adam Zomamim are witnesses who conspire to make up a story by saying they saw something that they didn't see. And the Torah says, "Rasis of law, you do to the witness when they're discredited." And two other witnesses say, "Hey, you didn't see what you saw, you were with us somewhere else." Right? So the Torah says, "Rasis of law, you do to him." Nothing. Kasher Zomam Lasais Liochid. Kasher Zomam. As he conspired Lasais Liochid. So Zomam, most of the time that we hear the word, tends to be a bit of a negative. You're conspiring, you're trying to hurt somebody, you're lying. And yet, Lapdaka, in other words, Zomam just means working with somebody to achieve something. Meaning, it can be good or bad. If I'm working with you to get this guy killed, like Adam Zomamim, right, so that's a bad conspiracy. If we're working to figure out, you know, how to be machazik, our learning center, that's a good conspiracy. The word conspiracy is not it's not intrinsically a bad word. You can conspire to grow in your avodas hatzvila, right? In other words, so Zomam is actually a neutral word. And it basically says she conspires, meaning she works with others. This is a remez too, that you have to learn Torah v'chabura, with chabrusa. Right, what do we say? Harvey Lomanati, Merab Isai, I learned much from my teachers. Umechaveirai, Leishamayam, from my colleagues, my chaveirum even more. Umitalmidai, Yaisa Mikulam. So Zama Masada, she plans on getting a field, but again, the Ras says, following. You'll notice here that she does two things. She plans on buying a field, and with the fruit of her own hands, she plants a vineyard. So first, let's focus on field and vineyard. So here the Gemara says, and he says this many places throughout the book of Mishlei, that what do you get from a field generally? Lechem, wheat. Wheat, in turn, is bread.
Mortilion.
Well, yes, if it's separate. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, you can't plant them together. That's right. So bread, he says, refers to the halachic part of the field. I don't mean plain halacha, but you know, we can borrow the pilpul of halacha. Wine refers to the agada, mystical parts of the Torah that are called wine. So, in other words, we would call lechem to be the migla, the revealed part of the Torah, and the keren, the vineyard, is the source of the nistar part of the Torah. We call it Kabbalah, but it includes Agadah as well, because the Gemara says, in Agadah are genuzin kol hasodos, all of the secrets of the Torah. And in the agadic portions. That's what it is called, Yayin. It's called Yayin. It's interesting. When you open up a page of Gemara, you can almost always tell if a top is agadic Why is it a bigger page? Because there's less Rashi and less Tosos. Right? So people think, oh, the God is easy, it's just stories. Well, first of all, the language of a God is hard, because the language that tends to be more Aramaic than Hebrew, most, whatever. So that's a really minor point. But the Chachalevich used to say, really, it's a number of questions, he says, that the reason why in yeshivas we often skip on that, sometimes even in the shir, I don't know what the practice here is, but sometimes we rarely hit Sagarita, we'll just skip it. We'll say, we're going to skip the next three blocks or something. So Chaim Shalom says, people think we skip Sagarita because it's so easy, learn it and learn it by yourself. He says, no, it's so deep, it's so difficult, that we're not able really to approach it. I mean, all Maral Svarim are essentially explaining Sagarita. And the Gra too, as far as the Baron Kelvin, who used to give this very shir, before I came to hear the Gra Hissel, but he wrote a book, The Juggler and the King, which is a translation of the Bir HaGra on some Agaditas and Baba Basra, some difficult Agaditas, Rabba Bar Bar Chana, and he talks about how deep the Agaditas are. So based on this, therefore, the Pasuk is emphasizing that the Torah gives a person, again, the question is, who's the woman here? It's the woman, the neshama absorbs from a field the halachos and the details of halacha, and eventually can progress to the vineyard, which is the yayin of the Torah, the sodos of the Torah. First of all, there are a lot of things to keep in mind here. First of all, you'll notice the following. The progression is very specific. First you plant your field. And just say plant. First you buy your field. That's another interesting one. But first you have your field. And then you plant your vineyard. That's very important. Because what is that basically saying? That before one can delve into the sodas of Torah, one has to have a mastery and a grounding in halacha. And that is why we find a tradition that Rishonim already said, that one should not learn Kabbalah until they have mastered the Talmud, mastered Shas, and are at least 40 years old and married. Again, you want to point out, you know, so people say, well, what about this? You know, people learn Hasidus, which has a lot of Kabbalah in it. Well, the answer is, I mean, we're not really learning Kabbalah, you know. The fact that one has a little bit of a thought here and there, that's okay. That gives a person a chizuk, that gives a person an inspiration. That's not heavy duty, you know, real Kabbalistic learning. But if you want you to go to Rav Hillel across the street and learn the Eitz Chaim of the Arizal, you know, he probably would not let you, I'm guessing, he probably would not let you in until you know Shas or whatever.
I'll
talk about
this.
Oh, did you go? Oh, you went
out? No, I didn't know the Arizal, but some people.
Yeah.
She plants a field and she...
No, that's the other thing. In other words, it says she conspires to buy a field. Now, I didn't discuss the buying versus the planting. That's going to be another issue. But right now, just the first thing, that soda is the bread of halacha, and karam is the yayin, the wine of sodos. And the order is very clear, because until you're grounded in halacha, you really are not able to understand the soda.
Right. As you said, the bread is the halacha in a way. Bread, when a person is breathing, it's energy, you know, zone of life. If he drinks wine, he could drink a drop and hurt himself.
That's right.
So in a way, like when a person follows the halacha, you know, it's a safe way to navigate their life. But if you delve into Kabbalah, like with that Bar Kocho, you know, then you could hurt yourself.
That's a very good point. They actually tell you that, you know, in order that you shouldn't get a hangover, get drunk, you should eat bread. You know? So that's what I'm saying.
A lot of people went into Kabbalah, and that's what Kabbalah
what you're saying is 100% right. That is, the halacha gives you a grounding. It gives you a foundation. It tells you how you're supposed to live. Then when you have that foundation, you can take in the wine, and it's not going to intoxicate you. It's not going to make you drunk and wild and uncontrollable. If you went to the wine first, you're right. From the bread, you can come to the wine, but from the wine, you won't get to the bread. No, that's it. I mean, that's why Kabbalah is sometimes described as being dangerous for a person. The soul wants to leave the body, or just can, the Gemara itself tells us, the Mishnah tells us. But the four great tzaddikim, they were in high grade, but for whatever it was, they weren't high enough for this. They entered the secret paradise, the paradise of the secrets of mice and their cover, the chariots of creation. And one died, and one became mentally imbalanced. And Elisha ben Adoya became the heretic, became the Abikoros. And Rabbi Akiva was the Nichnas B'Shalom B'Yasa B'Shalom. He was the only one who was able to take it. So this is a very powerful thing. So why it's called wine, this makes a lot of sense.
But point is, again, you could use it to elevate yourself, you could use it to make Kiddush, or you could use it to get drunk and something. So,
right.
But you don't have this, though, but.
Yeah. The paradise comes from the Hebrew, right? It's a primitive, but it's the paradise of the
first book.
Now, the other thing
is, were the other ones not Nichnas B'Shalom?
Well, Elisha ben Adoya, at least I think I can say that he was not, because indeed the Gemara identifies all sorts of pre-existing problems that he had. The others were very great. I really don't understand what the problem was, what level of preparation did they lack. This is Ben Azayim and Talmudei, they were very, very great Talmudei Chachamim. So I can't tell you what the particular issue was. But,
I'm actually planning a trip, so...
be careful. I've long had, this is a total speculation, I don't know if it's true, and
yes.
Maybe I'm totally, totally off, but you know, Rabbi Kaplan, was a Mekubal, he dealt with this. He wrote different books on Jewish meditation, Malki Kabbalah, and things like that. So he warns people, that when you go into certain meditative states on the shameless of Hashem, that you have a buddy with you in your life, right? You have somebody, because the neshama, it's so connected to Hashem, that the neshama wants to leave the body, because it sees the sweetness of the Shekhinah, and this world becomes repulsive and ugly, and you need someone to keep you in this world. And that's what he says, it is dangerous to get into a meditative state without somebody didn't believe that. So my totally non-proof speculation, you know, he himself died as a young man. I think maybe he didn't have a buddy. I think that it could have been that very process that he was talking about. And of course, I'm going to tell you, there's all the history of Rabbi Kunal dying young. Yeah, Rizal died at 39. Marsha Kedivero died at 48, you know, and Rebbe Kabbalah typically died earlier.
About Hindu meditation, is there such an issue?
Well, yeah, I think Hindu meditation is equally dangerous, if not more so, because you're connecting to Koho Satuma that you want to destroy, meaning, yeah, this is important. In other words, this is an important thing, because I'm not saying, you know, Hindu meditation is nothing and garbage. No, I'm saying it's real. But there is a concept of being misdavek in kochos of impurity. That's a real thing. It's not a fake thing. It's a real thing. But it's a real thing that can be awfully, awfully destructive.
How could it be destructive?
Because there are kochos of impurity. What can it do to you?
Yeah.
Well, it can kill you. Which is pretty bad, but besides that, you can also be makalko in your neshama in different ways. Even if you come out alive. You know? That's why this is a big issue. I just want to mention one thing about this. One of the big issues, it's a hard issue, is different types of alternative medicine are getting more and more popular. Every other cuddle guy is out with this. He has a certificate in acupuncture or something. Now, some of it, you know, reflexology, acupuncture, you know, they're not such a big deal. I mean, you know, they can help, whatever. But they have things called different types of energy, which uses your body's energy. In other words, it's really using spiritual kochos.
So it's called Machachad?
Yeah, that's one of them, right? One brain, right? Right. So people ask the question, well, can I go to a non-religious energy healer or to a goy? Now, if you ask me, you know, can I get heart surgery from a goy, you know, if he's the best doctor, the answer is yes. But we offer that heart surgery from a very devout Catholic, who had a lot of respect. They flew him in from Cleveland. Because that's a matter of technique. Of course, you need Siyata Dishmaya, but if the patient is a tzaddik, there'll be that Siyata Dishmaya. But that's a physical technique. You know, sew up this thing, cut up this thing, so the guy can do it too. But energy healing is based on the utilization of ruchniyistika kochas. And if the ruchniyistika kochas are not coming from sources of kedushin, they potentially can be very, very damaging to a person. So I would be very reluctant to get energy healing from someone that's not a minor in a kodesh baruch hu. Because we believe there are sources of power. I mean, they all come from a kodesh baruch hu, of course. They're not independent of a kodesh baruch hu. But a kodesh baruch hu did create the world, maybe as a facilitator of chila, negative spiritual powers. And you just shade them to whatever they are. And when you tap into them, you can get results. The results can be poking at each other. So one has to be careful about it.
Even though they're both doing the same thing, a Jew and a non-Jew, but the fact is, Maimon, Kodesh Baruch Hu, changes
the... The question is, you know, you're using a certain power. Is the power coming from the Sitra Achra?
You can utilize the same power the same way.
Yes, but the source of the power.
What's that, Kabbalah?
Hashem gave you different sources of power, sources of Kedusha, sources of Tumah. It's hard to, you know, again, if you would ask the Rambam about this, well, first of all, the Rambam probably didn't like energy healing at all, but if you would ask the Rambam about this, I think the Rambam would deny this. The Rambam Shita is, there's only Hashem and everything else is fake. The Rambam says, no such thing as shading. Right? So the Rambam would basically say, if it works at all, it can only be from Hashem, and therefore there'd be no problem. Although he would probably say it doesn't work. But you know, this is a thing, but the Vilna Gaon writes on the Rambam. The Rambam says, no such thing as shading. The Vilna Gaon writes, philosophia harura utasve. His preoccupation with the accursed Greek philosophy led him astray to believe that the only things that exist are rational things. We asked the Kutzker Rebbe in the 1800s, is halacha like the Rambam or the Vilna Gaon or the Chazal? And the Kutzker Rebbe says, for sure the halacha is like Chazal, that there are shaders. So we asked the Kutzker Rebbe, how come we don't see shader today? And the Kutzker Rebbe says, well, once the Rambam passed it, they don't exist. Even the shader have to respect the Rambam. So they stop showing up.
So I'll say it exists, you know, the book called the Ma'apach. So he says, he shows pictures, I don't know if it's true, from London, from other places, that it's like shading.
How can Rambam go against the
Rambam? No, well, the Rambam explains, it doesn't go against the Rambam, the Rambam explains that Chazal was speaking in a mosh, it's a little more power. You're not describing
any witness.
It's interesting because the Talmud Yerushalmi does not mention shaving. It is very interesting. The shaving only mentioned the Talmud Bavli, did not mention the Talmud Yerushalmi. I don't know if that meant Eretz Yisrael was purified or those kochos.
But the Rambam doesn't think that today these shaving were not.
Where?
In the general of the world. These,
you know, who knows? You know, who knows? There's a lot of things we don't know.
I said these kind of.
There are things we don't see. You know, there are people who have ESP, extrasensory perception. They claim to see certain things. You know, are they fakers? Are they psychotics? You know, a lot of these things. I mean, all of these things, like autistic children, you know, have this, these communications. You come across a facility called facilitated communication. Very controversial. But there were those that said they believed in it, that they thought it was true. They put these autistic children who can't even talk. They put them in front of a keyboard and they just follow the motions of their hands. And the kids type all sorts of messages from a Kodesh Baruch Hu about doing tshuva and Abba Yisrael and the like. And this is a raya that Hashem is like channeling Nevuas through these children. Some people say it's totally, totally fake, totally fake, and the adults are manipulating. But they were condoning that story that said they thought that indeed there was something to it. So there are many things in the world we don't understand. We, Chabad is 100 years old, and I discovered, if I understand correctly, he says that not everything is understandable in terms of pure logic, pure rationality. There is a whole other dimension. So the other thing I want to focus is this, though. I want to focus on the idea, and this is what I doesn't talk about, so we have to think about this. If the field represents halacha, the wheat, and the vineyard represents the notion of the deep wine of the Torah, and we understand the order. You first have to have the wheat, and then you go to the wine. But you'll notice that the process is very different. The field, she conspires and buys, and the vineyard, she seems to plant with her own hands. Right? So it's an interesting idea here that she buys the field. Of course, buying a field doesn't mean she doesn't plant it also. You buy a field, then you plant it. I get planted every year. But the vineyard seems to be something she plants herself, and you'll notice we don't have the verb of conspiring. So it could be there's a shtickle rabbis like this. Actually, shtickle rabbis. The Mishnah Chagiga says that the deepest parts of the Torah you should only teach on a one-to-one basis, meaning a rabbi should not teach more than one student at a time. Because there might be a misunderstanding of the secrets, right? Meister Merkava, you only give to a yachid. So maybe there's a rabbi, when it comes to halacha, you should have many groups of people doing things. We learn as a group, we have a shir. But when it comes to the deepest mind of the Torah, one has to do it by himself, or at least a one-to-one rabbi. We don't have the conspiracy, so to speak, of learning these sodos. And maybe the idea, too, about the buying is that although halacha you can essentially buy, meaning you can simply take what you're being given, but to understand the Kabbalah, there has to be an inner wisdom that wells up from within you that is a gift Hashem gives you, meaning you can hear all the Kabbalah in the world, but if it doesn't come from your planting, it's not going to make sense. So it could be remorse in here that Torah is something you can receive, Kabbalah, but Kabbalah actually means to receive something, but Kabbalah in some ways has to come from within you. It's a gift of Hashem, gift of the nature of prophecy, which you can't just get it from somebody. Okay, we'll do one more. Oh, I'm going to do one second. Chagra b'oz masnaha vata ameitz zeromosa. Again, the Pshuta, we're still describing this remarkably industrious woman who gets up at night, takes care of her family, goes out like ships to bring her bread into the home. She buys fields and plants vineyards, and she girds, she belts her loins, her waist with strength, and she strengthens her arms, right? Just the only expression of girding your loins means when you're ready to go out into the world, right? You put on your belt, etc. So the Gra says that the revenue is the following. The Eishes Chayel needs, now again, it's always confusing. Is the Eishes Chayel the Torah or the Talmud Chacham? But either one, it works here. That Torah and Talmud Chacham need supporters. We need auxiliary aids. These are called Machzike Torah. We know Machzike Torah is the word of Yisachar, of Yibolim, and Yisachar. The Chabetz Chaim, in fact, says that this is a remnant of a mitzvah we're going to read about in 2 weeks, where you have the Aron HaKodesh, right? The Aron HaKodesh had poles that were inserted, right? The Levim carried the Aron HaKodesh on poles. And these are called Badei Aron. And what does the Torah say about Badei Aron? That even when the Aron is at rest in the Kodesh HaKodashim, you are not allowed to remove the Badei Aron. It's a love in the Torah. If you take the body out of the Aron, you get Malkus. That is one of the 365 negative commandments. Lo is your commandment. What is the remez? So the Chabad Chaim says very nicely. He says the Aron is the Torah. The Badei Aron are those that support the Torah. Right? They carry the Torah. They enable the Torah to be carried. tirade, there's the sublime. So the tirade is teaching me that just as the Badim supported the tirade when they were when the Aron is being moved, so even when the Aron is at rest in Olam Haba, when the Talmidei Chachamim get all their reward, the Badei Aron remain with the Aron. So this is Chafetz Chaim says. Now, the Gra says here, there are two types of people that support Torah. One are the ones who write the checks, who give the money. That money is very important in this area. The other are those who are physically mishamish Talmidei Chacham. Those who, you know, they feed the Talmud Chacham, they drive the Talmud Chacham, they take care of the Talmud Chacham, or the people who are learning Torah. They provide physical and emotional support. There is financial support, and there is physical and emotional support. And we know that that's also important. That's the statement of Chazal, Gadol Shimusha, Yaisur Mibuta, that to serve the Talmud Chacham can even be greater than learning. So Yeshua ben Nun. Yeshua ben Nun became the Moshe's successor, not only because he learned from Moshe, but because he used to clean up the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, in this way, as you emphasize, this level is every time you clean up the Beis HaMikdash, every time you put back a Seder. You're not putting back the Sefer for you, for your learning, because you know you're learning, I can leave it on my table. That's what's that? You're putting back the Sefer because you want to be Meshamech. Other people that might need that Sefer and not know where to go. Where to go. So you're Mekayim that in your Godol Shimusha. Yeshua. Same thing. If you clean up, you're a waiter, right? And you're helping people learn Torah or enjoy the meal, which will then enable them to learn Torah better. You are Makayim the Indian of being Mishamish. Okay, not that we're all from the Chachamim, but to be Mishamish people that are learning Torah. So the Gemara says the idea that we're Machzik Torah in two ways, financially and physically, emotionally, is the meaning of the Pasuk, Eitz Chayim Hi L'machazikin Va V'samchaha Meyushor. The Torah is a tree of life to those who support it. Machzikimba is the paycheck, is the check. Vitalcha, those who hold on to it, are those who physically and emotionally support the Torah. Right? That's why there's Machzikim and Tomche. Machzikim Torah, Tomche Torah. Refer to these two types of support. So he says the following. He says that you find from the Zohar HaKadosh that those who financially support Torah are called the thigh, called the legs. Right? Just as the leg supports, the thigh supports the body, the machzikei Torah. In fact, the Zohar says very beautifully, this is the Sarai Shel Esav, the angel of Esav, wanted to destroy Yaakov. Why did the angel of Esav want to destroy Yaakov? Because Yaakov represents the Koach of Torah. And the angel of Esav wanted to destroy the Koach of Torah. But the angel of Esau was unable to destroy the Koach of Torah. But he was able to make the thigh lame. And the Zohar says, to mix my metaphor, the Achilles heel, so to speak, of Am Yisrael is that he weakened the financial stability of the name of Am Yisrael. That's why Yaakov is limping on his thigh. The Chafetz Chaim used to quote this Zohar. But the Chafetz Chaim says that this was the curse of Sarai Shel Esav. This was his partial victory. That the financial condition of most of Satira is always going to be vulnerable. As the Chafetz Chaim used to say, any yeshiva that does not have financial problems, perhaps is not a real yeshiva. So, you should have great, great faith in Ursa Meir. It's an ever stick of up in terms. That way. No, because it is a pillar, if you think about it. You think about all of the institutions in the world. Good, I understand if you're a secular person, say, well, medical school is more important. Okay, that's fine. But you go to Harvard, Yale, you'll have programs in hieroglyphics and in cuneiform writing. No, things that, you know, even from a secular perspective, are not going to be more important than Libra the Tiger. So how come these departments can get so much money, and, you know, was the partial mitzvah of the Sefer Shalaisik. Now, what does that mean? So next time the yeshiva asks me for money, I say, well, sorry, you guys have to suffer. Well, this is the same time that, you know, in the 19th century, when they introduced anesthesia for women and children. So there were Christian theologians who said, not allowed to give a woman anesthesia. The curse of Chava was, B'yesev tel libanin, you'll give birth suffering. She has to suffer. Of course, the only men said this. A woman has to suffer. Well, what's our terrors? Our terrors is, Hashem made the Teva a certain way. As he's saying, that's the Teva of the Eila. The woman's going to suffer. But we are permitted and we're commanded to try to alleviate it. That's the same thing. The Nisayon is that Achzakas Torah is going to be financially difficult. But we need Sidenu and we're free to do whatever we can. So the Gemara says very beautifully that Achzakas Torah does require a measure of strength. Meaning to say, in a world, you know, where the economy goes up and down, sometimes a person, it might be a big sacrifice for a person to give up his money. Right? So, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts the blessings of Torah in the world, he will give the Machzikei Torah the inner strength to do the right thing, even if it's hard for them. And the same thing is true for the Tomchei Torah, who provides physical and emotional support. So he says, these are the two parts of the Pesukim. She girds with strength, Masna, meaning her thighs, meaning she will give strength to the Machzikei Taira, who will be willing to support Taira even if it's financially hard for them. But Ta'amein, Sarah said, she will strengthen her arms. Her arms refers to those people who do things for the Talmidei Chachamim in physical and emotional ways. And this is a bracha too, because they need eyes, meaning to say, that they need also a sense of encouragement. They need to feel that there should be in the endeavor. Right? You can't be mavachal them and say, well, you're really a gornish, but we'll give you the money and that's good. The machzike Torah need to have a sense that they are real partners, and that's the oath. The Torah will give them the strength to do what they're doing, because you need chizuk. The machzike Torah needs chizuk, as well. Okay, we just do one more, we're going to pass it quickly. But again, let me just point out the obvious thing though, that the way the Torah gives strength to the Machzikei Torah is by making the Machzikei Torah see the importance of what they're doing. Meaning Hashem will give them the ability to see God will say what they're going to get. But that creates a very big achrayus on B'nai Torah. That is, if B'nai Torah don't use their time properly, if B'nai Torah don't show the midos of menschlichkeit, their parents. And by the way, Machzikei Torah can also be your own parents, by the way. Machzikei Torah not only blood philanthropists, but in birth your own parents who are Machzik Torah. That in order for them to get ice, to get the strength to do what they're doing, in spite of the fact that it's hard, they have to see that it's a worthwhile endeavor. And the achrayus for enabling them to see that it's a worthwhile endeavor is the way we live our own lives. And we have to live our lives in such a way that those who support us, whether it's family or general all Israel, see this is a good thing. And that's what Rabbi Yosef used to say. That he said the primary avodah of our generation is to be mekayim, what the Gemara says, to make the name of Hashem beloved. And you know, people should look at you and say, oh, if this is a religious Jew, it's a good thing. Even if they're not, you're not going to become broke. That's a good thing. That's something I admire. Somebody, a machshav, that's the person, you know, I would like to... this is the person I want to support. I want to support a person like this. When we live the other way, then chas v'shalom, we're taking away the ice.
So who is this pasuk going on? The Chagra.
Chagra the ice. Well, again, it would seem, based on what I'm saying, that it's a good description of the Talmud Chacham. The Talmud Chacham, right, the Eish Yisrael, has the achrayas of giving ice to the Masnayim, which are the Machzikei Torah, and the Zeroos, which are the one more pasuk. Tama, she tastes. He types shachra that her merchandise is good, meaning all of the produce, the bread, and the wine that she produces, that it's good. Lo yichbe b'alayla neira, and even at night she does not allow her candle to be extinguished. Meaning she works all day and then stays up all night. Of course, it's interesting. Before we indicated she did sleep part of the time, but she got up at chasais. By the way, one of the most famous Maimonides, we saw Salatir, again, I think it might be a legend, we're not sure how true it is, that one of the things that was Ma'ir him to devote his life to Musar and seeking ways to make us grow in our Avodas Hashem was he once met a shoemaker in Vilna. And this was before electricity. So the shoemaker was stitching a shoe. It was already not night by the light of a candle, flickering candle. It was very, very difficult to do. And that's a sensitive person. Maybe you see you ought to stop. It's so late and you can't see what you're doing. And the shoemaker said in Yiddish, as long as the candle is burning, there's still work to be done. And Rosh Hashanah said, the neshama of a person. It's called Mer Hashem Mishmasavim. As long as my candle is burning, I have to work. He saw that statement as like a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As long as the neshama is in the goof, there's work to be done. You have to use every moment. Use every moment. It's a Moshe Feinstein. Moshe Feinstein, the very last Shabbos of his life. So he couldn't go to shul anymore. He couldn't leave the house. He asked his son to find a minyan, just the daven musaf, whatever this was. His son went out in the street and just gathered people. It took a long time, it's 12 o'clock, whatever it is, to find people who happen not to daven musaf, or even how you get them. Although, I'll tell you what, I once had an occasion, I had to leave before musaf for an emergency. So it was like 2 o'clock. And I went to Zimmermansha. But I tell you, I had to wait an hour. They were beginning. They didn't create a tire.
Once I was there, I was reading the kosher last week.
Someone
missed it.
Okay. But in America, it's not so easy. In America, it's not so easy. But Moshe took his son. That would be a chiddush. You're 95 years old. The son really didn't understand why his father was so insistent. But he didn't say anything, of course. Rav Moshe, I guess, was Markish. Rav Moshe took his hand and said, remember, you have to chop mitzvahs as long as you can. He says, it's too late to chop mitzvahs. So that's the Yechma of Ayla Neva. But the Gemara says a very beautiful thought here. The Gemara says the following. Al-Pi Kabbalah, again, I'm just going to tell you, I don't have a clue, that's why I know. Al-Pi Kabbalah, our neshama, or our soul, has three parts. Actually, both has five parts, but there are three main ones. It's nefesh, ruach, neshama. Nefesh, ruach, neshama. The nefesh is primarily the animal soul that manages the biological function. The ruach is some level of mental cognition, mental operations, including the imagination. The neshama is the godly. Now, when we mentioned a few sukkim ago that the neshama goes up to Shemayim every night and gets great secrets, that's the neshama. But what remains, in fact, that's what comes back in the morning, or chatzos, whenever you get up. Shechzarta bi, what do we say, Moshe? Nishmasi. You've given me back my neshama. Right, that's what's nistalek. But the nefesh and the ruach, the nefesh and the ruach remain. The nefesh, that's why my heart beats and I breathe. And even the ruach, because dreams come from the ruach. Right? So dreams are the mental operations in which you put together memories and images. So the Gra says the following remes. Lo yichba malayla neira, neira, ner, is an abbreviation even at night, when the neshama is nistalik, the ner is still there, receiving Torah from Hashem to himself. So, on one hand, your neshama is getting stuff, but even the lower levels are getting nutrients from that night. So, that's neira is nefesh and ruach. Okay, we'll stop here.
When the neshama goes up to Shemayim, it brings down Terah, you said?
Yes.
For the mercy, why is it that? Why is it Terah? Why is that the imagery?
Yes, the reason would be the following. Terah is actually the words that we use for wild animals taking prey. Because the evidence is, the malachim in Shemayim don't want the neshama to take the secrets from Shemayim and bring them up to earth. So it's almost like a fight at the time. Rav Bowman said something, and I don't know if any of you remember Rav Bowman. Rav Bowman's great Mashiach Rasameach, and great Rav, both in Chutzlars and in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Bowman used to say, you know, this is really very significant, it's a very powerful image. You know, Simchas Torah, when we put back to the Torah after Hakavos, so we say, Suishon Meshechem, so if you know, there's kind of a blocking as we're trying to bring the Torah back. Sometimes people block it, and then, you know, it goes back, you know, forward and back, forward and back. So he said, that's a cosmic reenactment of the fact that the Malachim want to reclaim the Torah, take it away from us. And when we pull it back, we're like the people who are claiming the Torah from the Shemayim. Right? So there actually is a point in pulling it back a little bit. And indeed, the Pasuk in Yeshayo, that we often say, the Torah said about the death of Rebbe, when Rav Yehuda HaNasi died, and as he was dying, all the tefillos were trying to hold his neshama on earth. But the statement that Chazal said when he died was, Nitzchu ha'areilem es ha'metzukim, v'nishba ha'arein Hashem. That means what? Areilem are angels. The angels have bested the earthlings, and the ark of Hashem has been captured. And to this day, you see a so that's why it's called Terah. Literally, we have to grab it from the Malachi. Is the Rambam writes that he was going to write a sefer explaining what their symbolic of, but we don't have it, he didn't write it, which is unfortunate. In other words, he tells us these things are not literal, but he doesn't tell us what it is.
It's not a recipe for anything. It's something. What it says, it means something else.
According to the Rambam, it means something else. Yeah.
Has anybody
you wouldn't want to find out because just in case it is literal, you'd be a big bring the shade into the room.
Rabbi, if a person knows a book that meditates, is it mutter? Is it, I know a book that does it for 20 minutes, possibly without it's on and off. Depends if his roommate is home.
This is what Rabbi Kaplan wrote. I mean, Rabbi Kaplan wrote three books on what we call kosher meditation.
Should I let the person know that?
Oh, yeah.
If it's
mutter
to do it, I mean.
Well, it's mutter to do it, but not if you're concentrating on Avodah Zarah or non Jewish images. But there is a way to do it in Jewish way. That's a very good thing. Concentration, I've got one in davening, things like that. No, but you should definitely see what the Catholic books are, three books on it. I'm sure the library.